Welcome to Sideline Judgment. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
And today is a very special episode, Tyler, because it is August 1st, which means that football, college football, is officially back.
It's back, baby. Football is back.
Okay, let's slow down a little bit. We get games at the end of the month, but it's still, you know, the calendar month has turned, and we have circled college football at the bottom of our calendar this month, and we could not be more excited.
There's a noticeable light at the end of the tunnel now, whereas there wasn't before.
If you follow our Sideline Judgment Twitter, which you should be, at @SJ_pod, you would notice that at 12:06 a.m. on August 1st, the Sideline Judgment account, which was tweeted by Tyler this time, we share the account, so you sometimes don't know who's tweeting what. Although, by our voice, I think you can see who tweets what. But Tyler tweeted, "It's time. College football is here." And all I was doing as I was getting ready for bed was laughing because Tyler waited until the exact minute we hit midnight to go ahead and tweet that. But, Tyler, that's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about not college football as a whole. But we're talking about one team in particular, and that is our beloved Florida Gators football team. Before we go into previewing the offense, defense, special teams, going into our patented tweets we've shared, talking about the schedule and giving our moment of the week, our official moment of the week, sorry. Let's go ahead and go through quick hits. We start every episode with it, and it's all going to be Florida related. But I think we got to start with the big news in college football today. I'm kind of grateful that we pushed our podcast to Wednesday because now we have this news to talk about. Urban Meyer is under fire, head coach at Ohio State, ex-coach at the University of Florida. He recently fired his offensive coordinator. Or his wide receivers coach, I think. Yeah, his wide receivers coach, because there was multiple allegations of domestic violence between him and his partner. And apparently, Urban Meyer, a couple weeks ago, fired the coach, rightfully so. There were evidence that it was a domestic violence situation, and that's something that should not be supported. But today, news breaks out that the ex-wife of the ex Oklahoma State assistant says that Urban Meyer's known about these domestic violence issues since 2015, which is much, 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 much different than the story Urban Meyer has said, who has been quoted and in a press conference has said that he did not know about it until he fired his coach. So this is some kind of red flag, red tape, black lining type of issues. This has the magnitude of, I love John Oliver. He's one of my favorite satire political comedians. And he talks about the Trump administration as being stupid water, something that has all of the possible consequences of Watergate, only stupid. And I feel like this is kind of Urban Meyer's stupid Watergate, because this is something that could have easily been prevented, could have easily been avoided, but he decided to apparently, allegedly, cover it up. And now we're in this whole mess of what do we do with Urban Meyer? I mean, it's crazy.
Yep, the whole thing comes from Brett McMurphy releasing that he got hold of the text between Courtney Smith, the ex-wife of Zach Smith, the fired wide receivers coach, mm-hmm. and Shelly Meyer, Meyer's wife.
Oh.
In which case, if you look at the text, it's not explicitly stated, but it's kind of put out there that, I mean, Shelly Meyer definitely knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So by extension, you would believe, like a logical human being would then believe that Urban Meyer knew what the situation was.
I have a hard time accepting the fact that Urban Meyer's wife was withholding information about a member of his staff to Urban Meyer. I find that hard to believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, just for the way it looks, I don't think any of that evidence is, you know, admissible
mm-hmm.
because it's kind of circumstantial. Mm-hmm. But it just kind of points out just a little bit of a kind of a crazy thing. I mean, Urban Meyer did a horrible thing in an effort to, you know, help his football team. Color me shocked, but
yeah. I mean, I'm not gonna say this hasn't happened or allegedly hasn't happened before. Where, I mean, Aaron Hernandez was a member of the Florida football team while he was here. Like, let's leave it at that. You know.
Like, yeah. So it's very disappointing. These things aren't shocking, but they're always disappointing and. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that some good can come out of this. I think that this is going to be a really serious issue, though, moving forward. I don't think this is something that can just be covered up.
No,
it's and not in today's climate or anything like that.
No, and I don't think it should be. It should not be covered up. I think.
I agree.
Think we're moving towards a society where things like this are much more open, and we're much more vocal about how these things are wrong. And I hope that, you know, the truth comes to fruition and justice is served. Now, before we move on to our next couple quick hits, which we got to move through since we got to get to our preview today, just a quick question. How does this affect Urban Meyer on your personal coaching rankings? Or is that only done based on the field performance? Because if we're taking college football coaches as leaders of men and as people responsible for grooming men into society, because, I mean, it's a small percentage of college players that make it into the league. So, yes, everyone's trying to make it to the league, but in reality, the majority of the players that you come across with, you're just being a mentor and a father figure and helping them for life. How does this affect Urban Meyer as your number two coach in active ranking? And I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but I just thought of it and I thought it was an interesting thing.
Well, when I did that coaching ranking, it's kind of evaluated really at the core on the basis of the ability to win games.
Mm-hmm.
I said when I did my breakdown of Mark D'Antonio within the coaching rankings that just you have to take all of, like, in this coaching ranking, taking all of that off-field stuff away, he's an excellent coach. If I considered that ranking article looks completely different. And the issue that – and the thing that happens when you take that into account, though, just with doing an article like that, is that there's so much that I don't know.
Right. But none of us know.
Yeah. And, like, this doesn't – for that, if I was writing that article today, I would still put Urban Meyer at two.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that Urban Meyer is the second-best football coach in college football. I think he – has at many times shown that he's willing to do awful things and willing to let awful things happen in an effort to win football games.
Mm-hmm.
And that is appalling. But on the basis of his pure football coaching ability, he's still very, very high up there. But it's just disgraceful every time something like this comes out. And it's come out so much with Urban Meyer.
Unfortunately. We're going to go ahead and move on from an ex-Florida player to a coach to an ex-Florida player who never really set foot on the field. Justin Watkins was arrested and has been released and left the team. Justin Watkins is the fourth overall best recruit that we had. He was an athlete out of Claremont, Florida. Tyler, do you want to go ahead and tell us exactly what he was arrested for and why this was kind of the last straw for a player who signed his letter of intent a few months ago?
Well, the first thing you take into consideration is that this is not his first offense after signing with Florida.
Right.
This is the second time he's been arrested in 3 months, and that's a big deal.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And he is facing four charges this time, including two felonies, and he was booked, I believe, about a week ago, and he had third-degree felony charges of kidnapping, false imprisonment, and domestic battery by strangulation. And he's also charged with two first-degree misdemeanor battery counts.
Wow.
He's not been convicted of anything yet. Court is still in session. And this is only the second arrest in 3 months.
Right.
And he was a player that, I think he was a player that always had a little bit of an off-field thing.
Mm-hmm.
But very soon after the news came out that, immediately after the news broke, he was, Florida put out a statement that he was immediately suspended from all team activities.
Right.
And then very shortly afterwards, he tweeted that he would be leaving the Florida program and that he was, you know, dealing with, him and his family were dealing with the legal situation right now. He would be leaving the Florida program. Personally, I think that wasn't a, I'm choosing to leave. That was a, the coach just came to him and said, you're not going to be a part of this team, but we're going to let you tell people that you left it.
Right. They gave him the, I guess, the respect that he could make the decision on his own, and I put that in air quotes. He was asked to resign, basically.
Yes, it's basically it. He was asked to resign rather than just being told he's fired.
Right. It's like McElwain last year after the Georgia game. He was asked to step down, but yeah.
And this whole thing was just it really, at least from a Dan Mullen's perspective, this was a moment you had to take a stand on. Where you wanted this program, what do you want in this program to be acceptable?
Mm-hmm.
And
yep. I think this is the first real moment where he can kind of separate himself, because while yes, we had tons of success in the mid-2000s, we also had a lot of gray cloud above us. It's like when we used to say, listen, if we're gonna talk bad about Florida State during their run of championships and how they had tons of players get suspended and talk about Jameis and everything, we also need to look in the mirror and say, look, we need to be a program that wins and competes at the highest level nationally, but at the same time holds the greatest amount of character. And I feel like that's why they brought in Muschamp. Jeremy Foley said before, he brought in Muschamp to clean up the program in that sense. So it's nice to see that Dan Mullen is taking a stand. He, after the first time, he said, hey, we're going to give you another chance. And since he did not come up and he did not produce and stay out of trouble, he said, look, sorry, we got to let you go. I think we might see Justin Watkins on the next season of Last Chance U. So we'll see what happens with him.
Hey, maybe we'll see what happens.
And I'm always rooting for people to grow and develop. People, you never ever stop growing, and no matter what the mistakes you make in your life, so long you need to learn from them and become a better person. You know, so yeah.
This is a 17-year-old kid.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm wishing the best for Justin Watkins. Doesn't excuse any of his behavior, but there are consequences to that, and there's consequences in your career. In this case, it's his position with Florida football, and there's consequences in the legal system. So he'll have to serve whatever those consequences are, and he'll grow, and hopefully he becomes a better person and a better man in the future. Last point on our quick hit, speaking of police reports, I feel like I don't really want to talk about this because it's kind of all been resolved and it didn't really come up. But Tyler, do you want to go ahead and give us a little information as to what happened on campus with the University Police Department at the end of May of 2018, and we're now in August, and these things came up in late July with a few of our players involving, once again, airsoft rifles and apparently a frying pan?
Yes, according to police footage, one of the players involved, Ciante Lewis, the tight end, brought a frying pan to this incident. Mm-hmm. Now, let me just explain what this incident is. So apparently there was a confrontation that occurred outside of UF's Keys residential complex. Mm-hmm. You used to live there.
So did I.
Those were the days.
Yeah.
It was back in May 28.
Didn't you live in it renovated?
I got to live in renovated. Yes.
I did not live in the renovated ones. So, boo. Go ahead, continue.
I enjoyed. Well, I was right next to it when the laundry building burnt down.
Me too. We were across from each other. I was in building 10.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You were in the other one. You had the renovated ones. I didn't have the renovated ones because they did half of that in the year before I got there, and then they did the other half the year after I left. So.
Well, I guess I win this then. All right, so the incident involves several UF football players and a Gainesville area gambler named Devontae Zachary, a.k.a., in air quotes, Tay Bang, and his friends, who apparently were very mad and very upset at the UF football players because they had bet on them the season prior and it did not work out.
Oh.
So the players involved, the four football players involved were tight end Ciante Lewis and Kamora Gamble, Kadarius Toney, Kyrie Campbell, receivers Tyree Cleveland and Rick Wells, and quarterback Emory Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And so apparently, from my understanding, what happened is that the players were all walking back to where to Keys, where most of them live, and they saw that Tay Bang, again mm-hmm. in air quotes, and his friends were there. They left, then came back brandishing airsoft rifles that were painted to look like they were real rifles, and a frying pan. Still, I can't get over that. And a confrontation occurred, and no one got hurt, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
A report said that police found a black AR-15 rifle lying across the backseat of a vehicle in Kadarius Toney's vehicle during the scene, and Toney told the police he bought the rifle and had it with him for protection because of the locals. This is a very unusual situation.
Now, is this an actual AR-15 or an airsoft AR-15?
This is a kind of a separate thing because the weapon in Kadarius Toney's vehicle was an actual AR-15 rifle.
Okay.
Again, I don't believe anything is going. I don't believe that. I mean, no one got hurt in this, so that's mm-hmm. great.
Right.
But nothing has come of this. Mm-hmm. Florida has said that they're facing just internal discipline, but there's been no charges made.
Right.
So just kind of an unusual situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just the frying pan is just weird.
I think we need to move. I propose a motion to just refer to Ciante Lewis as the frying pan.
Let's do it.
I think we're doing it. That's how we're going
to
do
it. On this podcast, you will be henceforth known as
the frying pan. Wonderful. Well, let's hope that stuff just doesn't happen again, and our players just need to stop messing with airsoft rifles. And in Kadarius Toney's case, actual rifles. Like, I don't know if that's a good look.
I just don't get it. This is like the second event. This is the second incident with Tyree Cleveland and an airsoft weapon.
I know. Like,
Why does this stuff keep happening? I don't understand.
I don't know. And I guess in this case, anyway, it wasn't his fault. They were kind of approached and ambushed, but whatever. Let's hope we stay out of that. Well, that's enough of quick hits. We're going to go ahead and move into our Gators team preview. Tyler, you are in charge of the offense. I'm in charge of the defense. And we'll both talk about special teams. But why don't you go ahead and give us what we need to know about the offense this coming year.
So what you need to know about the offense this year. So we're going to be running the spread this year.
Yeah, the spread is back. I think the first thing to note is that we have an offense this year. So let's talk
about that. I'm just going to go ahead and with a little bit foreseeing, but I foresee considerable improvement in the offense this year. But, okay. Yeah, considerable improvement. I don't think that this offense is just going to suddenly become like Big 12, like amazingly good. But I think there will be market improvement. But the real thing is that this offense is going to be channeled, and every Dan Mullen offense is, it's going to be channeled through the running game. Mm-hmm. And we'll start off with looking at Florida's backfield for the season. It's stacked.
Is it now?
It's got some players, mm-hmm. and it's got a lot of them. Jordan Scarlett returns from suspension a year wiser, and with no carries on his body from the last year. So
that's a big thing. That running backs, the wear and tear on them is real. And for him to sit out an entire year and not take that wear and tear on his body is going to be a good thing physically for the Gators.
I would agree. And then, so we have him. We have LaMichael Perine, who led the team in rushing touchdowns last year with 9.
Yes, very good.
Malik Davis.
I'm sorry,
Sergio's
who?
Sergio's favorite.
Who?
Malik Davis.
Yeah, I was waiting for that. I was waiting for you to talk about him. That's my
He'll
boy.
He'll be returning from injury.
Yes.
And I think that, given because the other names I'm going to say as well, like I think they're not going to rush him back. I think he's probably the most explosive out of all the the running backs that are on the team, mm-hmm. but
yeah, I don't think they'll rush him back either. Yeah, I don't expect to see him really, really take be fully involved in the game plan until mid to late September.
I would agree. Yeah. We also have just the last couple, Ardarius Lemons, who was pretty good as a freshman last year, mm-hmm. in backup role, and then the two incoming freshmen, Iverson Clement and Damian Pierce, who, mm-hmm. I've heard really good things about from camp.
Right,
but they are freshmen, and it's just gonna be hard to crack the rotation.
Yeah, it will. And I remember watching Damian Pierce footage and like his huddle tape, and he's explosive. Yeah. I loved watching him run. He reminded me kind of Malik, but in that explosiveness. Now he's not my boy Malik, but you know, he's good. Like I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed him.
I like the look out of this. This is the strongest of the position groups on offense. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the team is going to run through the running game. Part of that is the offensive line, which returns. I'm pretty sure it returns every starter, mm-hmm. And almost every player, and it'll be now coached by Coach Hevesy, who's been, mm-hmm. with Mullen pretty much his entire tenure, mm-hmm. and he has a kind of a knack and a reputation for building nasty offensive lines. Just gritty, tough offensive lines. Offensive line at Mississippi State, way less talented than the Florida one. If you look at recruiting stars, much better though.
But my favorite part about the offensive line is that we're returning all 5 starters and we have depth. Like I'm looking here, you got Jawan Taylor, Fred Johnson, TJ McCoy, Brett Heggie, and the leader of that offensive line, Martez Ivey. But then you got Nick Buchanan, you got TJ Moore, you got Stone Forsyth. Like you got players that have experience. Like there's only one freshman, and that's TJ Moore.
Yeah, he's a redshirt freshman.
Yeah, exactly. And he's
and
a redshirt
freshman.
Including
the that's not including some of the recruits that we brought in this year.
Exactly, exactly.
Noah Banks, Chris Blake are both tackles, and Richard Garage as well. All highly rated. So I think the line has some improvement to do. What's good about this team is that the offensive line was very good at run blocking last year, but it was not good at pass protection.
Right.
So in a way, you don't need to improve much on run blocking because I think it was already good at that.
Mm-hmm. And we had moments where the line was developed. We had moments where the line was producing.
Yeah. It's got to help in passing situations. I think with better coaching, it can get there. That's going to be a big key for this team. Moving on from that, the receiver position. I'm actually pretty high on these receivers at the tight ends.
Right.
But I'm high. It's dangerous because I'm high on a lot of them without any of them really having production, other than Van Jefferson, who will miss transfer.
Now, and that's a question mark. If we've yet to find out if he's been cleared by the NCAA. But they cleared Shea Patterson, who came from the same program. I have a feeling there's rumors that amongst like Gators Twitter that they're gonna clear Van Jefferson, and I think that they might clear what's his
Trevon
name?
Grimes
and Trevon Grimes, yeah, because Trevon Grimes is going back for a family issue, and I know that there's an exception they can take for family that they won't make you sit out a year, and I think I don't know what Van Jefferson's case is, but I've heard rumblings that they're gonna be cleared, so. Even without those two, I like our wide receiver stable, but I think even with those two, we have some.
I'm very high on it with those two. Without, it's just going to be a matter of can these players stay healthy? Because the big issue last year was that I really liked the wide receiver core going into last season, but Antonio Callaway gets suspended and then Tyree Cleveland gets hurt.
Right. And then
and
we're left.
The best players go down, and all you really have is Brandon Powell and Josh Hammond and Freddie Swain.
Oh my gosh, can we take a moment? There's no more Brandon Powell.
No more.
Oh my god.
Out routes.
No more out quick out routes into the the middle of the field.
Yeah. But oh, I think it's sad. Gator great.
Yeah, no, Gator great. I put him up there with my personal Gator greats. Number one is Chris Chioza, and you can't change my mind.
I'm not going to.
One and then honorable was Will Greer, but we'll talk about Will Greer later on in the show. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I think the most important receiver, personally, I think the most important receiver out of all of this group, though, is Kadarius Toney.
Okay.
Changed his number to number four because he fits. I'm not saying he's the same type of caliber player as Percy Harvin, but he fits the Percy Harvin mold of the runner slash receiver. Who can also do wildcat duties.
Yes.
And I think that with Mullen's track record, and given that this team, and this is going to be a constant for me, this team is going to, it's powered by the running game. Everything that this team will do is, and everything that Mullen does generally, is about the running game. Kadarius Toney offers a different kind of ability and asset that even the running backs at their best don't. It's right. The versatility. It is just the ability to him as a playmaker. One of the things that McElwain caught a lot of flack for, but I think was actually in a way brilliant, what he did with Antonio Callaway is that there were times where he used how good Antonio Callaway was and how versatile he was, and he used it to get other receivers open.
Mm-hmm.
Now, occasionally, a lot of times that didn't work, but in theory, that should be a smart thing.
Right.
I think that with Kadarius Toney's versatility, that can work. But let's talk about the big position.
Yeah. Well, before that, what do you think about our tight ends?
Oh, our tight ends. I think they're serviceable. Santi Lewis is
you mean
is good.
The frying pan.
The frying pan is good. And they've got some good underclassmen, but I've got to see it. Really,
I'm excited to see if Kyle Pitts has an immediate impact or if he is just kind of working his way into the collegiate system. That's the tight end out of Pennsylvania that we brought in.
Yeah, I'm excited about him. I'm excited to see where the tight ends go. Because we recruited a couple, and I'm excited to see it, but again, we have, other than the frying pan, we have not really seen anything from these players.
True.
So I can't, I don't really know what to think of them. And also, I mean, at Mississippi State, Mullen didn't really use his tight end a lot in the last couple years, but he's been shown, like when he was at Florida, he used Aaron Hernandez extensively. So it really just depends on the players he has.
Exactly. Yeah.
But the big position, quarterback.
Yeah. Talk to us.
There's three legitimate potential starting quarterbacks on the team. Mm-hmm. There's Felipe Franks, the redshirt sophomore, Kyle Trask, the redshirt sophomore, and the true freshman, Emory Jones. I think they all offer different skills. Kyle Trask is probably the most pure pocket passer and maybe the most accurate as a passer just strictly, mm-hmm. but he's never started a game, like ever, not in high school.
Yeah, he was a backup in high school as well.
So, I mean, I have serious doubts about, like, how can he lead a team? I don't know. Emory Jones, he's just young, and Mullen's track record as a quarterback developer is that if he can avoid it, he likes to wait to play his guys. He's very big on making sure that when you go out there, you're ready. Like, now, you may have all the physical ability in the world, but he's going to wait until you know the system. So I feel like Emory Jones will get playing time, but I don't feel like he's going to throw him in as the day one starter.
Now, do you think because of the new redshirt rule where you can play four games and also still use your redshirt, do you think we'll see more of Emory Jones in game situations, kind of like how he used Tebow his freshman year?
I think that would be very possible.
Okay.
I think that just gives them more liberty. I feel like they never were going to redshirt him.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like that gives them more liberty to just kind of like see what they're doing.
Right.
They'll play him kind of early in different spots. And then if it's really like, if it kind of dovetails and the season is kind of just not going the way they want at the end, they might put him in and just be like, all right, in like a Jake Bentley situation where I'm like, yeah. All right, well, we're just going to screw the red shirt. Just go play.
Right.
But I think that's a possibility. I think that only helps the team.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
My personal, and I think you'd agree with me, I'm a projected starter is Felipe Franks.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that.
And he struggled a lot last year. Mm-hmm. But the reason I think that he's going to get the job is that, one, he has more experience than Kyle Trask and Emory Jones. He's more physically gifted. He's really struggled with his mental processing, but I feel like Mullen can fix that or will fix that. But the biggest reason is that, like I said before, this team, everything this team does is going to be predicated on the running game. Mm-hmm. What quarterback is the most ready and offers you the best complement to that? It's Felipe Franks, in my opinion.
I think it's the one with a year of SEC football under his belt.
Yes. He's a better fit for Mullen's system than Kyle Trask. He's not a perfect fit, but he's very, when I look at him and I look at former Mullen QBs, I'm thinking he looks a lot kind of like a Chris Leak to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can run, but he's clearly more of a pocket passer as a prototype. But Felipe Franks can run, and I think that really, that's going to give him the edge in this competition.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he can be solid under Mullen. It's really just going to be about can he pick up the mental processing. This unit, as an offense, averaged 22.1 points per game last year.
Mm-hmm.
That's 13th in the SEC out of 14 teams. That's 108th nationally.
Ugh.
It's not good. The only bright side of the team was that the Russian offense averaged 156.4 yards per game. And that's 75th nationally. That's mm-hmm. our highest ranking for any offensive stat.
It's still not good, but...
That's not good, but that was a noted improvement over the previous McElwain teams. And that, I think, again, will really help this team going forward. I feel like any team that they face that they can dominate, they can control the game on the ground,
mm-hmm.
they have a good chance of winning. So I think this offense takes a considerable step forward. I do not think that it is a 30 points per game offense, but I do think that we're ranked about 13th in the SEC. I think we can get up to around to the 8-7 halfway mark.
Okay. Nice. All right. Well, that's been your offensive preview. I'm going to go ahead and talk about the defense real quick. A big contrast to the offensive rankings, our defense actually was better. It wasn't a top five defense nationally as we have been accustomed to, especially that 2015 year where we had the best defense in the country. We ranked sixth in the SEC in total defense, and 31st nationally. So a pretty good ranking. And then everything else in scoring defense, rushing defense, and passing defense, we were either 7 or 8. So we were kind of middle of the run in the SEC and kind of middle of the run nationally, 69th, 50th, and 28th in passing defense. Let's work from the inside out. I love to work from the inside out when talking about the defense. Let's start with the defensive line. We're going to be running a 4-2 under brand new defensive coordinator Todd Grantham, who is known to want his players to not only be physical but be athletic and be quick. He puts a big emphasis on his defensive linemen being quick off of the ball, not just bulldozing and power rushing, but being strong when they make a hit, but also being quick off of the line to be able to put pressure on the quarterback. And I think that's going to work with our outside ends. We got Jabari Zuniga, the junior, who is an athletic freak. He made it onto the Athletic's freaks to watch out list, top 50 freaks in college football. I think he was ranked 34th or something. And on the opposite side, you got the leader of the defense, defensive captain, CeCe Jefferson. He's a senior. He came back just like Martez Ivey did. They want better for this Gator team. They want to go out better rather than a 4-7 record and a 3-5 record in the SEC. So I expect a lot of leadership from CeCe Jefferson, and I also expect a lot of intensity and a lot of coming off the ball quickly. Coach Savage has got these players bulked up, but looking ready to be athletic and lean as well. Like, you take a look at some of the players that we mentioned in previous episodes, like C.J. Henderson and Marco Wilson, how they got really big and really jacked, but they also didn't lose any of their speed or athleticism. So I'm very interested to see that. I think a big position strength now that our suspensions are back is our linebacking core. David Reese returns. He's in his junior year. Rashad Jackson returns back from suspension. Voshon Joseph, the rock of last year's defense. We talked about it a lot, that whenever Voshon was playing in the game, we were significantly a better defense. I think you can speak to that too. We talked about that a lot last year.
I felt so too.
Yeah, he was kind of the de facto leader of that defense, and so he's still going to be there. Killian Johnson is also back. So we have more depth. That was a problem, that we didn't have any depth at linebacker. We were playing walk-ons last year, later in the season, who did well, but they're not these high-end
athletes.
They're not these high-end athletes.
They did well for what they were asked to do, but they shouldn't have been asked to do it.
Correct. And also, Randy Shannon is the linebacker whisperer. So when you got one of the best linebacking coaches in the country, it also helps, you know? Yep. So that's what I'm excited about with our linebacking core. But as always, the strength of our defense, it's got to be the defensive backs, the secondary. We're DBU for a reason. We produce the best cornerbacks in the country playing at the highest level. And if you are one of the best cornerbacks or one of the best defensive backs in the country, you should want to play at the University of Florida. It's a simple fact. We have, in my opinion, two of the top five cornerbacks in the SEC, in Marco Wilson and CJ Henderson. They're both true sophomores. I'm excited for to see how they do with their newfound strength and their newfound bulk on their bodies in this offseason. And I'm going to go out on a limb and just say that I think at the end of the season, our cornerbacks will be the best in the SEC, if not the best in the country. I think after another year under their belt, Marco had the best percentage of had the best true defensive cornerback percentage of all corners in the SEC last year. He allowed the least amount of catches on the least amount of throws. They were throwing C.J. Henderson's way, who ended up getting four interceptions last year and two of them taken back for touchdowns, simply because they did not want to throw Marco's way, you know? I think it's more of a compliment. When teams don't throw your way, it's a compliment to you because they don't want to go up against you. It's like what happened last year two years ago when teams would keep throwing to Quincy Wilson because they were so afraid of Jalen. But it just didn't matter because Quincy was just as good as Jalen, you know?
Exactly, like that.
So I feel like we're going through another thing. I think another big thing to watch out for is the fact that we're going to be playing with a nickelback mostly. And that is Chauncey Gardner, Chauncey Gardner Johnson, I apologize. He changed his name, and we need to respect that. I read an interview that it's a very personal family reason why, so we got to make a concerted effort to make sure it's Chauncey Gardner Johnson, not just Chauncey Gardner anymore. We got to make sure to do that, Tyler. I'm just saying it so we remember. He moves from cornerback out to nickelback, which last year when he played there at times looked to be his best position. You know, they tried playing him at safety, at free safety, and it didn't kind of work well. He kind of got beat in coverage. They put him on cornerback when they could, but when they realized that they had Marco and CJ playing at such a high level that he was kind of expendable. So they moved him into nickelback towards the end of the season, and that's kind of where it worked out. And I feel like
I think that's his best position.
I think so too. I feel like Todd Grantham saw that on the tape last year and came back and realized and said, "Yeah, okay. That's kind of your best position." And then out in the safeties, we got Brad Stewart and Juwan Taylor. I also forgot to mention on defensive line, redshirt freshman Zachary Carter is going to be playing. And we have quite a few good players coming in as well. Andrew Chatfield, a linebacker out of Plantation, Florida, my literal hometown. Like, I say Broward all the time, but Plantation is my literal hometown. He went to American Heritage, which was my literal high school. So excited to see that. Trey Dean is an athlete out of Georgia who could play on the defensive side of the ball. So
he's going to probably contribute as a backup early.
Yeah, that's what I feel. He'll get reps, second, third quarter reps kind of thing. Trey Dean, the freshman cornerback, going to be backing up Marco and CJ. Brian Edwards is a sophomore as well. He was in that same – he was in that same recruiting class as Marco and CJ.
I'm personally really excited for Juwan Taylor, number 29.
Yeah, to really kind of step into that free safety role.
Yeah.
I'm excited too.
He didn't play much last season, just injuries and stuff, but I thought he played really well when he did. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited.
Yeah.
The secondary is going to be good.
I think so, too. This whole defense is going to be good. I feel like with the linebackers being led by Voshawn and David Reese, the defensive line being led by Jabari and CeCe Jefferson, and our secondary with Marco, CJ, Chauncey at the nickel, Brad Stewart, and Juwan, this is looking nice. The thing with Florida is that we're a very talented team. We just haven't had the direction in which to go in. And I feel like the best defense that I have seen in the last decade was the 2015 defense that has all 11 players in the NFL right now and was coached by Jeff Collins in McElwain's first year. But that was more of a competent coordinator who used his talent wisely, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think that the addition of Todd Grantham and his scheme is big because he's extremely attacking scheme. Mm-hmm. And personally, I think Florida needs that. I think this is the type of program that kind of feeds on aggressiveness on defense.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't necessarily, and like, we got to be prepared that third and Grantham is a thing for a reason.
Exactly.
We're going to probably give up a couple big plays, but as Todd Grantham has said, he's like, I'd rather you mess up going 100 miles per hour than do it right going 60.
And I'd rather you be jacked because of Coach Savage going at it 100 miles an hour than doing it right going 60. You're getting it right going 60 and not having a strength and conditioning program.
Yeah, I would agree because I think this aggressive mentality that Coach Savage's strength and conditioning program mm-hmm. and Grantham's just general coordinating scheme, I think it's going to benefit this team. I think this team needs that. I think this team needs an aggressive style of defense.
Yeah. And I think we found it in Coach Grantham. Yeah, that's all I gotta say much for the defense. It kind of speaks for itself. I'm excited to start season. Gator football season starts a month from today.
Amazing.
A month from today is our home opener.
30 days.
30 days, my man. I'm pumped.
We can make it. Real quick, special teams.
Yeah, special teams. Can we get a moment of silence? Can we get a moment of silence for Johnny and Eddie?
Moment.
All right, we're gonna move on now. Yeah, we lost the best punter in school history and one of the most efficient kickers in school history.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be tough to overcome. Like, it's weird because I don't think we'll be bad, but it's just like I'm gonna cry first time we have to punt or kick a field goal.
And I'm gonna be disappointed when I'm on Twitter and I don't see the "Here's Johnny" GIF the first time.
But his younger brother Tommy Townsend. Mm-hmm. Is taking over the punting duties.
And he did well in the spring game.
He did very well. He's got some dance moves.
Yeah.
He's got swagger. I'm excited about that. What?
He's got swagger.
Yeah, that's true. He does. And, mm-hmm. And as well, Mullen also signed the Evan McPherson, the number one ranked kicker in America.
Who he had a commitment from when he was at Mississippi State, and then he flipped to Florida when Mullen flipped to Florida.
So I'm not like too worried, mm-hmm. but it's not gonna be the same. They might be just as good, but it just emotionally will not be the same.
Right. We had an attachment with those guys. When your team is so bad that you have an attachment with your punter and your kicker, I'm excited to not have an attachment with my punter and my kicker. Let's make it that way. Let's put it at that.
If we have to sacrifice our attachment for them to be good,
yeah,
I'll do it.
But we're also honorary Oakland Raider fans, right? Because they're both in Oakland.
Sure.
They're both in Oakland. Sure.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
For them, I love them too much.
Yeah, we love our boy. I've been saying this. Johnny Townsend was the best punter in the United States of America across all levels. No one can change my mind about that. There's a reason the Raiders got rid of Marquette King in order to sign Johnny Townsend. All right, I guess that's our team preview, right? That's our team preview. There's not much left in the show. We got tweets we shared, and then we're going to just briefly talk about the schedule and then go into our official moments of the week. But first, let's go tweets we shared, Tyler. I'm looking at the rundown here. You are first, my friend. What is your favorite tweet that you had sent me?
Well, it's kind of down between two, but I'm narrowing it down to one. And sticking with Gator football, this is a Gator football podcast episode. We got a tweet from Brett McMurphy that says, Tennessee will honor its 1998 national title team September 22nd when the Vols host Florida. And I think this is so perfect, and it's a great way because we're about to talk about the schedule next. But mm-hmm. So we got to ruin it, right?
Of course. Like, if you saw my – I quoted that tweet after I said it to you, and I just said LOL because I just think it's hilarious how they're going to honor the 98 team and they're going to have Peyton Manning in the building against a team that Peyton Manning never beat.
The one team that he faced multiple times that he never beat.
Yep. I just think it's funny. You know what I have to say to that?
I think it's great. I can't wait.
You know what I have to say to that?
What do you have to say?
It's great to see all these people out here disappointed.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I have to say.
I love it.
I love it. Oh, man.
I'm
all
so
right.
excited for that.
Tyler, send that tweet to our Sideline Judgment Twitter account so that we can go ahead and tweet these out once the episode is posted. My tweet of the week that you sent me is from Ben Murphy, at Ben Murphy TV, and it is a video, and the caption is, Heisman hopeful Will Greer kicks the season off with Tennessee this year. Do you remember the last time he played Tennessee? I do, and talk to him about it today. Try not to cry. And it's a video, and you see Will Greer in his lovely beard that he has talking about, they asked him the question, and he says, oh, yeah, I remember that. And he says, that was an electrifying day in the swamp. I love how he still refers to it as the swamp, as if like he's still on the team, and he's going to run out on Saturday and play it. Oh, man. Anyway, and then after that, they murph into the video of 4th and 14, which to this day is the single greatest sporting event that I have ever seen in person, like in a stadium. Like that's my all-time favorite Gators memory as being at school. And I know you say the next year's Tennessee, the Felipe Franks, the next Tennessee home game, which was Felipe Franks' throw last year. But I disagree. My favorite one is 4th and 14 against Will Greer. That stadium was popping. It was jumping. It was, oh my God, what a time. And so they put the Celine Dion, My Heart Will Go On Forever music over, which just makes everything better. And my favorite part about that video is that it ends with what's it? Oh my God, what's his name? Coach for Tennessee at the time.
Butch Jones.
Butch Jones. It ends with Butch Jones just kind of dejectedly walking with his hands on his hips, shaking his head. And I was like, yeah, you knew what was going to happen, Butch Jones. You blew a lead. Will Greer is that guy. Throws to Callaway. Touchdown.
Yep.
Fourth and 14, man. What a time.
Ben Murphy, UF alum.
Yeah.
He knows where to push all the right buttons.
He knows. Ben Murphy knows. God, my dream is to get Will Greer on this podcast.
One day.
One day, man.
We got to make that happen.
We got to make it happen. I got to get Will Greer on the podcast. So that is my tweet we've shared. I'm going to go ahead and send that. But yeah, so next up we have the schedule. Tyler, do you want to go ahead and just give us, we're not going to do a pick by a week, pick by pick. You're going to have to go on to our recently finished Sideline Judgment, website, where you can read a joint article that Tyler and I will post later on this weekend, maybe sometime early next week, about our schedule, our official sideline judgment predictions. And it'll be a cool article where we'll go back and forth and we'll have some banter. It'll be a fun thing. But we're not going to give you predictions today, but we will be talking about the schedule. Tyler, take a look at the schedule. What do you think stands out? I don't see very many true road games. Go ahead and talk to us. Talk to us about the schedule.
So what I will say is that I think our most difficult gauntlet of the schedule is three consecutive weeks. It's at Tennessee in week four, at Mississippi State week five, and LSU at home in week six.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two tough road games because I don't think Tennessee will be very good, but it's early in the season. They'll still have something to believe in. We'll still have something to believe in. Tennessee hates Florida. Florida ain't too fond of Tennessee either.
They have.
Pretty many and there. This rivalry game is going to be tough, and it's a game that I personally feel it could be like that 2014 game where it's just like nobody scores.
Oh, the 9-7 must-champ game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's a tough environment. At Mississippi State is the next week. Dan Mullen's going back to Starkville.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be raucous. It's going to like that. That's going to be an insane. It's the Mullen Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be an insane environment. That Mississippi State is a tough, senior heavy team. So I just like that's going to be a tough game, and there will not be an empty seat in that stadium.
Mm-hmm. And then
LSU at home,
which I'll be there for.
Yes.
Sideline Judgment reunion.
It's going to be a content-packed mm-hmm. weekend.
It will. We're also going to have a very special special edition podcast with friend of the pod, Courtney Mims, talking about LeBron James. But that's more to come later on.
But yeah, it's – so like LSU – I mean I've been on record saying, you know, LSU will not be what LSU is like reputation is this year. But playing them after those two road games at home, it's gonna be difficult because they're still a talented team.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a tough 3-week stretch. You know, after
also
that, you get
the LSU game is also where Tim Tebow's being inducted into the Ring of Honor.
Yes, he's gonna be in the Ring of Honor.
So it's also an emotional game as well.
Yeah, it's also the honoring of the 2008 national title with the team.
Exactly. So.
So. I mean, that's a big part of the schedule. I think that overall, the schedule, I would say, is a fairly easy schedule,
mm-hmm.
which is why I'm getting I'm higher on this team's potential than maybe I should be, mm-hmm. because I think the schedule as a whole is set up fairly nicely.
Now, for me, I think that stretch is important too, but for me, it's post bye week. So after the bye week, we always have Georgia. I feel like Georgia is head and shoulders the best team in the SEC East and probably the second best team, if not the best team in the SEC. So it'll be a competitive game and it'll be tough for us, but it's a rivalry game and you never know what can happen. If we beat, listen, we beat Georgia with Treon Harris. Like anything could happen. So I think that's a big question mark game. If we can get a win that game and then go into Missouri at home after the embarrassment that was last year, I think we'll show up. I think we'll show up. I think we'll do well. The key there is to stop stop that offense. Drew Lock can stop the entire offense as a whole. And then after that, we have South Carolina at home. Now that to me is going to be one of the most interesting games of the year. I think it's an underrated game. We talk about Tennessee, we talk about LSU, we talk about Georgia, we talk about Florida State. But this South Carolina game is going to be interesting because Muschamp has these guys playing good football. You know, he has a quarterback. He has a strong defense, as he always does. It's going to be a tough game, and I feel like people are going to overlook, and that's a game that we're equally as competitive. And honestly, if we end up beating Georgia, that's a game that could decide the SEC East.
I mean, I will say, and this is kind of a preview of something we'll be doing soon, but like, I'm very high on South Carolina.
I am as well, and it's not just because I'm in Charleston. I'm very high on South Carolina.
I mean, it's just that Muschamp has a quarterback, and I think Jake Bentley, he's a good quarterback. I think he needs to take a step, and we'll save a lot of this for another episode. Mm-hmm. But I just think that since Muschamp as well has like hired a new offensive coordinator, shocker, but he's kind of adopted the spread a little bit more readily. So this game can be important. I mean, they were a much better team than us last year, and they only beat us by 8 points. So. Yeah. At home. So it's as much as I think they'll be a good team, it's a very interesting game. It's in the swamp. It'll be at this point in the schedule, what's interesting to me, and I'll go into my next point, is that it's just so interesting to see what this team will be by that point. Mm-hmm. That'll be the SEC. That'll be our SEC final game in the SEC. Mm-hmm. Probably the most interesting game on the schedule to me.
Yeah, I think so too.
The road trip to Florida State.
Oh, I was going to. No, to me, the most interesting one is South Carolina.
And I think that's a good contender. But I think, just for me personally, I think the most interesting game on the schedule is going to Florida State. Mm-hmm. Because this is a completely 100% new chapter
in the rivalry.
Florida State rivalry.
Yeah.
Because both teams are in their first year with the head coaches, and yet we have lost about, I think we've lost five straight to them.
Yeah, I never saw Florida State win in my time at UF. Or I never saw Florida beat Florida State in my time at UF.
It's okay.
I know. Okay. I don't want to talk about it.
Florida State has beaten Florida 5 years in a row. However, the coach that was largely responsible for that, he's gone. Mm-hmm. And on top of us not knowing how the Mullen-Willie Taggart relationship / rivalry will go, on top of that, I mean, we have no idea what either of these teams will be at this point in the season. Mm-hmm. For both of these teams could be kind of collapsing into the shell of themselves, very clear that they're still in a process of a rebuild, mm-hmm. or they could both be surging with their new head coaching. You just never know when new head coaches take over, if it's going to go great or if it's going to take a while. Mm-hmm. So at being the final game of the season, I think that's very interesting to me because I don't know what these two teams are going to be, mm-hmm. and we don't know what this new version of the rivalry is going to be.
I agree. I think one of the things that stuck with me the most in regards to sports that my stepdad has told me once, he said that when your team wins, you're happy. But when your rival loses, you're even happier. And I feel like one of my favorite things about being a Florida fan and going to school at Florida and selling my soul to the institution that is being a Florida fan is that I not only look at Florida games and watch those things, but I go back and I watch Florida State highlights and I see how they're playing. And I take a look and I look at to see what moves they're making and how their schemes are going out. All because the last game of the year, I want to go down, drive up to Tallahassee, and I want to beat Florida State. And I want to have all of those war chant stuff. I don't want to hear any of that. I want to be able to say that we are the best school in the state. Which brings me to a point where we need to play Miami more often, but that's another story. But like, you know what I mean? Like that's big, you know, that's important to me. And what you said, that it's a brand new chapter and I'm really excited to see how this kicks off, because when the Jimbo Fisher, Will Muschamp chapter started, that was electrifying for those first couple years, you know, and I'm very excited to have a brand new, fresh slate where, you know, we had Bobby Bowden and Spurrier. We had Muschamp and Jimbo. We had Urban Meyer and Urban Meyer and
also
Bobby,
still Bobby Bowden.
And Bobby Bowden. But this brand new reset is going to be good for the rivalry. So I'm very excited for that. I think you may have just convinced me that that might be, again, the game I'm most looking forward to. I thought the South Carolina game.
I say that now in preseason. And the reason is because, again, we don't – these both are just two new teams. Mm-hmm. We don't know what they're going to look like.
Well, I mean, and I thought South Carolina, because I feel like so much is going to be weighted on that. Our conference hopes. Can we make it to Atlanta? Maybe bowl eligibility. You never know how the season goes. And then the Florida State to me is just – Florida State is like a bowl game without a bowl game, you know? You always want to win it no matter what. And yeah. And I want that for CC, and I want that for Martez. And, you know, I want that for all of our players, you know? I want them to go out beating Florida State. So
That's how you want your players to send out.
That's how you
want. I have one question for you.
Yes, I have an answer.
First of all, do you have any more thoughts on this, the schedule?
No, you kind of hit the nail on the head with the Florida State stuff. That was my next point, so.
Yeah. Well, my big schedule, without actually looking and, like, picking a game, like, I want this to be a feeling. And we're going to go into this more when we release our article, but I want this to feeling. What is, like, the win number feeling? Like what is that of this team to you? Like, for me, it's like, to me, this feels like an 8-win team.
I was going to go 7 or 7 to 9, so I guess 8, but it's because there's games, and we'll talk about it more in our article. There's games that I can see us winning, and there's games that I can see us winning big, sneaking a win, or losing, or being blown out. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, there's a few games on this schedule that I'm like, it could go either way.
There's a lot of, with this schedule, again, a lot of it because we don't know, there's a lot of games that there's very few games that are a guaranteed win or lose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At least in conference.
In conference, yeah. Well, mostly in conference. I feel like our out-of-conference games were pretty good on, with the exception of Florida State, but that's every year. But, yeah, so that's my I think 8 is a decent number, and we'll debate this out on our article. So
yeah,
I think that's a good place to put a bookmark in this schedule conversation.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel as well.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go ahead and give our official moments of the week before we sign off. I'm gonna go first since you went first with tweets we've shared. My moment of the week was LeBron James opening his I Promise. Did I take yours?
Yep.
Sorry.
It's okay. We can share it.
We can share it. It's that big. My moment of the week was LeBron James opening up his I Promise school. This school,
it's amazing.
Yeah, he's giving every student free tuition, free uniforms, free bike, a free helmet for that bike, free transportation within 2 miles, free lunch, breakfast, and snacks, a food pantry for local families of the students that need help at home supplying food. And job placement and helping with getting jobs for the parents of the students. And I think the craziest one is LeBron is guaranteeing tuition to the University of Akron for every single student who graduates from that high school, which is impeccable. LeBron, you're an inspiration. I cannot wait to do this one day in South Florida. It's moving.
It's incredible.
Yeah. It's
incredible the impact that he has on the community.
Yeah.
And the impact that, not just the impact, like the unknowing impact that we talk about with a lot of things, but the tangible, purposeful impact.
Mm-hmm. He cares.
And it's just, he cares. And I love the name of the school. I love its mission. And one of the things, I don't know if you mentioned this, but they're also like, provides opportunities for the parents of the children to get GED.
Yeah. I didn't mention the GED part of it. You're right about that.
And it's just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's our official sideline judgment moment of the week. My also another, just we'll give another one since I took yours. I started watching Last Chance U season 3 this week, and I'm just so pumped for college football season.
It's almost here.
It's almost here. We're so close. Oh my gosh. And with that being said, next week we're going to go ahead and go full-fledged into more college football previews. We're going to do our SEC preview next week. It's going to be non-Gator related. Well, I mean, we'll see. We'll be talking
about... as in-depth.
Exactly, exactly.
We'll reference back to this episode.
Exactly, yes. But yeah, we'll be talking about all the teams in the SEC East and the SEC West, giving our individual team win-loss predictions, and giving our predictions for Atlanta, and answering the question, could we see two SEC teams in the playoffs again? You never know, you know? Depends on how the season goes.
You never know.
You never know. But next week will be our SEC preview.
I would have said no if you asked me that question this time last year.
I would have said no as well, because who would have thought that Georgia decided that they were Alabama 2.0? But hey, here's my optimism with that. If Georgia is the Alabama of the East right now, I want us to be the Auburn of the East, where we stick it to them and we're the one team that can beat them every year and ruin their chances. That's what I want.
It would be nice.
It would be nice.
And we're the more fun version.
And the colors work.
Yes.
The colors, destiny. It's destiny. Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
Well, I guess, Tyler, anything else you got to say?
Nothing much. Just excited to keep – we'll watch out for that article that we'll be releasing this upcoming week. And then next week we'll be doing an SEC preview, as Sergio just stated. Also, if you can't wait for college football, the NFL preseason starts
– Thursday.
Tomorrow.
Or it starts tomorrow with the Hall of Fame game, but
– we're taping this on Wednesday, but
– yeah.
Starts Bears Ravens. Was it Bears Ravens?
I don't know. All I know is Dolphins play the Bucks next Thursday. Or this
yeah,
Thursday.
Saints play the Jags next Thursday.
We're ready.
Let's do it.
I put the schedule in my Google Calendar. I'm ready, man.
I'm so ready.
Let's see if Tannehill's knees can hold up. also, well, if you need
spoiler
some
alert,
if you need some viewing, yeah, if you need some viewing tonight, the MLS All Stars are playing Juventus. At 8 o'clock on ESPN. And also Friday night, Johnny Manziel makes his CFL debut at I think 8:30 p.m. on ESPN2 against his former CFL team. So if you're also looking for some Johnny football watch, I know Tyler was very interested in that. So quick shout out to that, my friend.
It's time.
It's time.
He's back.
SEC preview next week. Keep an eye out for that article this coming week. And with that being said, this has been another episode of Sideline Judgment. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
And Tyler, I think we can honestly say we are not biased, but go Gators.
Go Gators.